May it please the Court, Robert Handelsman for the appellant. I'd like to emphasize that we are not arguing that the rebuttal evidence here is irrelevant. Our complaint is that there was no finding of substantial similarity, a finding which the cases on page 5 of the reply brief prohibit you from making. By saying in closing argument that Nelms, and I quote, is overstating this drive time by more than half, the government essentially said that the whole purpose of its rebuttal evidence was to simulate, recreate, or reenact Nelms' estimate of drive time. And there is no showing that Agent Jackson's drive was done under circumstance, under conditions which were substantially similar to those which Nelms had in mind when she gave her testimony.
Now, why wasn't the jury competent to determine whether or not the differences between the two drives was so great that the deputy's drive really was not at all helpful to the government's case?
Because Rule 104 gives that responsibility solely to the district court and not to the jury. Once the judge determines that the two are substantially similar, then it becomes a jury question. But first, the judge has to make a finding of substantial similarity, which, as the cases in a footnote and reply brief show, it's within his discretion.
Some treatises indicate that when evidence like this is offered in a rebuttal mode, that is, to impeach the value of testimony that's already been given, that the similarity issue really ought not to be enforced as greatly as if when evidence of this nature is admitted solely for the purpose of establishing a fact, i.e., the distance that it needed, the time and distance needed to travel. What do you think about those cases?
Well, are you referring to McCormick's citation in the government's brief? Government didn't cite it for that.
I'm not relying on their citation.
No, I haven't seen a citation on that, and I can't comment on it unless I read it. But it seems to contradict the plain language of Rule 104. 104 doesn't have an exception for rebuttal evidence.
Or any special rule. Yeah.
No, a substantial similarity requirement pertains to all parties. Whenever they put on the evidence, there's no exception in the cases that I've seen or the government cites.
So your view is that just as we require under the Dober case that the district court act as a gatekeeper.
Oh, so, Dober.
So here, he should act as a gatekeeper as well.
Yes, I would say so. He has to make the.
But surely the litigant is entitled to a little more latitude on rebuttal, right? Something comes up in the defendant's case, and the plaintiff has to scramble to prepare its rebuttal, so it's not going to be as well prepared as if it had notice in advance, right?
Well, the plaintiff, in a normal course of events, the defendant gets the government's discovery. In many cases, it's everything the government has. They didn't have that here, so they weren't really equipped to deal with it. So that's a countervailing consideration, too.
Well, that's irrelevant. The point is, if the defendant brings up something new, then the plaintiff is entitled to rebut, and it will not have as much time to prepare a rebuttal as it would have to prepare its case in chief.
But in a criminal, the defendant can't deal with the rebuttal evidence either. And did not seem to be a factor in the district court's mind. The judge just said, argue it to the jury. And a court can't allow inadmissible evidence in and just tell the opponent, just argue its weak points to the jury. There has to be a certain minimum standard met before that evidence is admissible. That standard was not satisfied here. Now, a consideration in all these cases is harmless error. We dealt with that in the briefs. I see I only have a little bit of time left, But you cannot call the government's case here overwhelming. Both of the government's occurrence witnesses had serious credibility problems. The defense alibi witness had serious credibility problems here, but with the rebuttal evidence, the government threw in a bombshell. And there was an insufficient basis for that evidence. And had that evidence been excluded, we don't know how the jury would have dealt with all of these credibility issues.
Well, the officer, Deputy Jackson, was cross-examined extensively about this drive that he took, right? And cross-examined on the differences between, the fact that it was at night and other things that were different than the day in question. So the jury had that before it to assess credibility.
The jury had that. But that is not enough because we don't know the circumstances which formed the basis of Nelm's testimony, and the judge didn't consider those when he allowed the evidence to be elicited. There has to be a finding of substantial similarity. It's not enough to be able to cross-examine a witness and then say, well, he was cross-examined. There could have been a world of circumstances different from those which formed the basis of Nelm's testimony to those under which Agent Jackson drove. He said he was driving over the speed limit. I mean, that is the most glaring.
Right, and that came, what I'm saying is, but the government didn't offer this evidence saying it was trying to show the identical circumstances under which.
Oh, yes, it did. It said so in the closing. When it said Nelms is overstating this drive time by more than double, we have the quote on page 7 of the reply brief. That was the whole purpose of it, was to impeach her.
I understand, but they didn't say that in this experiment that they were trying to recreate the exact conditions.
How else do you impeach her if you don't recreate the exact conditions? I mean, if one of them drove during the winter when it was icy out, it is going to go a lot slower. But the...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hansman. Your time is long expired.
I'll rest on the brief for the other issues.
Mr. Murphy?
Please, the court. I'm Brad Murphy, an assistant U.S. attorney from Peoria. Judge Williams is correct. We did not attempt to replicate the drive. She didn't drive. He did. We didn't know exactly what route he had taken. This was strictly done as a matter of rebuttal.
Very amateurish, though. Wouldn't it be better to hire someone, not your own police officer, and tell a person to drive at the same time of day, right? Identical time of day, preferably same day of the week.
Those under ideal conditions would be correct, Judge. You would want to do that. But, as I pointed out on page 8 of the brief, that wasn't possible here. We learned of this late during the last afternoon of trial. The only time I had to send that deputy out was that evening and put him on in rebuttal the next morning. Perhaps I should have asked the judge for a day recess. Maybe I will next time.
How long was the trial?
The trial was 2 or 3 days long, Judge.
I can see why you wouldn't want to have a recess. I understand that.
I basically did what I thought I could do under the circumstances.
Couldn't he have driven the next morning before the trial started? Well, I suppose you'd want to discuss.
The answer is yes, he could have. I did not think that was appropriate because that would be during a rush hour kind of traffic. I wanted him to avoid what we call.
I see. Right, because when the defendant had driven, that was what, mid afternoon.
Correct. Yeah. Right after the shooting.
You're saying it was too late. It was too late to duplicate the same time. So you
on that day, it was too late.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's.
Just a couple quick comments about the instruction issue. I know that wasn't touched on by counsel, but I would simply indicate that Here, this jury was instructed that their verdict be unanimous. It was a general unanimity instruction, and I believe this court has spoken that in the absence of a tender by the defendant of an instruction requiring the jury to agree, this is sufficient. If I'm pronouncing it correctly, I think that's the Pavlovsky case.
Well, I'm wondering, though, suppose that because there was uncertainty whether it was July 12th or July 15th, the indictment had just said a July. And could you present a case to the jury in which you say, you know, we think this happened in July. Some people think it was July 12th. Some people think July 15th. We don't really know. And all you have to do is agree that it was sometime in July. Would that be a permissible? Because then you have a situation where six jurors think it's July 12th, six think it's July 15th. Does that issue ever come up where they try to pin you to some particular day or some other particular fact?
And that's usually done by a bill of particulars to cause us to limit ourselves to a particular time and or day or window. In answer to your question, I believe only if I felt the evidence would be justifiably prove a continuing offense for several days in July, could I allege it that way? And here, our evidence was contained to this three-day window, and so that's how I limited the indictment. If you have no further questions, I'll be happy to waive the balance of my time, and thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Murphy and Mr. Hansman. You were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank you for accepting the appointment.